Tuesday, November 3rd, Black America can't vote like you're white. We have to vote like we're Black, and that means voting early. Physically going if we can, mail-in ballot if we can.
Welcome to a special edition of the Dear Culture podcast, the podcast that gives you news you can trust for the culture. I'm your host, Natasha S. Alford, Vice President of Digital Content at thegrio.com and a senior correspondent. And this week we're asking, Dear Culture, how much do you really know about voter suppression? In this extra special episode, myself, our CEO, Byron Allen, and Stacey Abrams discuss voter suppression in Black America. We also discuss why it's a tragedy that not enough Black people have filled out the census, and we talk about what's at stake for the 2020 election. Stacey is no stranger to the consequences of voter suppression, and in this conversation, she opens up to us about lessons from her loss and why this election is not a game.
I am joined by the CEO of Entertainment Studios, Byron Allen. And Byron, we have a heavy hitter visiting today on The Grio. Her name is everywhere in the news. It's been in the news for quite some time, but wow, we are lucky today, aren't we?
We are very lucky. We have the great Stacey Abrams. And every day I'm still upset about, you know, not calling her governor Stacey Abrams in Georgia. But let me tell you back. We're coming back, Georgia. We're coming back. We will be back. You know, I love Stacey. Thank you for joining us, Stacey.
Hi, Miss Abrams. Good to see you.
Stacey, please.
She's family. Come on, Natasha.
Well, you know, I'm sorry. I'm just looking at this resume and I know that everyone knows who Stacey Abrams is, but I'm still going to read some of these highlights. Not only is Stacey the chair of Fair Fight Action, she was a 2018 Democratic nominee for governor of Georgia who won more votes than any other Democrat in the state's history. And she was the first Black woman to become the gubernatorial nominee for a major party in the United States. So that's why I always, you know, I greet Stacey with the Miss Abrams, but you made history. And as Byron said, there's so many people who still feel the ache of that loss, but it points to the future as well. We don't want that to happen again. So what do we need to do to protect our vote? Because you said that voter suppression will happen, and you believe that there are people who are strategically planning to use it against the Black community.
We have to begin by understanding, well, first, let me say thank you to Byron for joining this conversation. Natasha, you had to see all of Georgia during the campaign, so it's good to see you again. We have to begin by understanding that this is a fight over power. And in a democracy, the power of voting determines who gets to temporarily own that power. And in the United States right now, race is the strongest predictor of political leanings. And so if you are a party that has organized its entire premise around the homogeneity of your community, and you have ignored or worse, demonized communities of color like the Black community, it is in your interest to prevent as many Black and brown people from voting as possible. And so what we are facing is the logical endgame of a party that is losing power because of the rise of demographic change, primarily led by the growth of Black and brown voters in our communities. And so, yes, the most current iteration of voter suppression is being propagated by Republicans. But let's be clear, Democrats did it too. And before that, it was the Federalists and the Whigs. So we've always had voter suppression. But so my argument is not that Republicans have created voter suppression. They've just been the architects of the current iteration, and their target is largely communities of color, particularly Black voters, because Black voters are the most likely voters to vote Democratic of any of the demographic categories.
See, I don't really care who started it. I just want to end it right now, right? But you're an expert on this because of what happened with you. And I think the most important thing that I really want you to communicate is that, in my opinion, the Black vote is the most powerful vote on planet Earth here in America, because quite often the white vote is split down the middle. And we, the Black vote, we are the deciding vote. We are the ones who will determine who lives in the White House forever. But we have to exercise our power. We need Black America to do three things. Number one, we need Black America to register to vote. Number two, we need Black America to vote. And number three, we need Black America to vote early. So Tuesday, November 3rd, Black America can't vote like you're white. We have to vote like we're Black. And that means voting early. Physically going if we can, mail-in ballot if we can. Don't show up on November 3rd like you're an old, rich white woman with all the time in the world and you can just go and vote on November 3rd. That day is not for Black people, because you will stand in line for 6 to 8 hours and then be told you are in the wrong place or you're not registered. You have to start early. Can you help us understand that and ways we can start early and truly get around this voter suppression, which is trying to stop the most powerful vote on the planet, the Black vote?
So I would begin by saying that the goal is right, the challenge is real. And so for so many Black voters, we live in Southern states, 58% of the Black community lives in the South. Most Southern states do not permit early voting. They were having battles about who can vote by mail, including litigation that's being promulgated by Republicans to block access to vote by mail. And so for a lot of us, voting on November 3rd is the only chance we have to vote. And that's why I want us to understand that this is intentional. And the reason I talk about the history of how we got here, it's so we can understand that, yes, it's happened before, but it's not a pox on all your houses. It's a pox on the house of power that's trying to stop you now. And that's why we have to focus on who's doing it now, because otherwise we get into the spiral of, well, they all don't want us to vote. No, right now, Democrats want you. We need you. Yeah. We have to understand why Republicans are trying to stop us. And that's why here are the three things you need to know about voter suppression. Number one, it is real. Voter fraud is not. Voter suppression is real. You know it's real because the Republicans have committed $60 million to constraining access to voting. Bill Barr, the attorney general, just said that he did not believe that all Americans should be entitled to vote by mail as he does. This is the man in charge of being the nation's attorney. And he has said that the privilege of voting early should belong only to him, because if too many people had it, it would lead to the election being stolen. What they mean is, if too many people vote, he loses his job. We need to believe him, and thus we need to vote. So we need to know that voter suppression is real and that it is coming from the top. The call is coming from inside the House, the White House in particular. Number two, we need to know what voter suppression looks like. It looks like, can you register and stay on the rolls? So if you registered and did not vote in 2012 or 2016 or 2018, you are likely not still on the voting rolls. You gotta check. And if you are on the rolls and you have voted, check anyway. My father, who registered to vote when they moved to Georgia, he and my mom registered on the same day. I went to look them up to get their absentee ballots. My mom was registered. My dad was shown as not being a voter in Georgia. Turns out they'd made a mistake with inputting his data. We were able to fix it, but it took some time. So double check and make sure not only that you're on the rolls, but that you've remained on the rolls. Number two is that you have to understand that they're going to try to stop you from casting your ballots. So know what the voter ID rules are. But in most states, if you vote by mail, you don't have to worry about ID. So if you can vote by mail, vote by mail. And if you can't, make certain that you have the identification necessary, because they are going to be incredibly strict. To Byron's point, they're trying to weed everyone out. And then the third is, let's make sure your ballot gets counted. If you have to put in a provisional ballot, make sure you come back within that 3-day period to fix whatever mistake they said you made. If you vote absentee, demand that they tell you that they counted your absentee ballot. As a citizen, you have the right to know. They don't have the right to tell you no. If we do those things, if we understand voter suppression is real, we know what voter suppression looks like, the third thing we have to do is not vote alone. To your point about overwhelming the system, voter suppression works best, not simply because it discourages or prevents you from voting, it convinces your entire community that it's not worth the effort.
That's right.
We've got to vote like not just our lives depend on it, but our future depends on it. And if That's you right. don't believe that, look at the past 4 years and project that out over the next 20. Communities, people who have told us they are not in this for our success. They do not want our growth and our opportunity. I'm not an alarmist. I'm a realist who has been in government. And I'm telling you now, power is incredibly seductive. And you, as a Black voter, you can determine who holds power. And so they're going to do their best to stop you. And the way to win against voter suppression is to overwhelm the system with our presence. Even if you don't trust it, even if you don't like it, do it anyway, on the off chance it works. It's like playing the lottery. You may not win, but does it hurt if somebody's giving you a free ticket?
That's right. Listen, Black America, you have got to get this so right, because people are investing enormous resources to make sure you get it so wrong. And you have got to be vigilant, and you have to work really smart, the way Stacey just laid it out. Stacey is an expert in this, and thank you for being here. You have to work hard. You have to get ahead of the curve. You have to make sure everything she just said, you're registered, you're properly registered. They have a way of making mistakes when it comes to Black people living in certain Black zip codes. Oh, we got it wrong. It was entered wrong. Even when Stacey went to go vote for herself as governor of Georgia, they told Stacey on camera, with cameras rolling, she was in the wrong place. I mean, that's how blatant it is. She walks in to vote for herself as governor of Georgia with lights and cameras in their face. You're in the wrong place, Stacey. I mean, share that with them and show them how blatant that is. Please share that story when you went to vote for yourself to become the first, you know, Black female governor of Georgia, and how they stole that election. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I appreciate that. Okay.
I'm sorry. I'm just getting started. And I mean, stole the election. Stole it.
You might end up my new
but
ring.
You know
though.
Something? You get to do that once, right? You can stop me from going to the basket once. But yep. From here on, you're never stopping me from going to the basket, and we're going to win championships forever. But go ahead and show them that pimp move they made on you. Show them. Tell them about it.
So I talk about this in my book, Our Time Is Now, which really tries to lay out the story of voter suppression so we can think about what needs to happen next. So I talk about both. But one example is that when I went to vote for myself in November of 20, or I went to vote early because I wanted to encourage people to vote early. I typically
vote in elections. Early.
But I went to vote early because we needed people to vote early, because part of the reason to vote early is how we know what they're doing. It's how we know how they're trying to undermine your right to vote. So when you vote early and you see shenanigans, you can report it and we can step in and try to do what we can to mitigate the harm. And so I went to vote early. I went to a precinct where I would argue that most of the people in that precinct wanted me to win. It was an early voting center in a predominantly Black community in a district that I represented. So I felt like I was in the right place. But when I get up to the table, I'm told that I'd already voted, and I voted absentee, which I had never done in my life. Until this year, I'd never applied for an absentee ballot. And the reality was, because I was, you know, a candidate, because I'm a lawyer, because I know the rules, I was able to, you know, quietly argue to get the issue fixed. But imagine if you're a new voter. Imagine if you are a shift worker who has exactly 2 hours before they dock your pay. You don't have the capacity to argue. And that's why it's so important that so many of us participate, because our presence diminishes the likelihood of mistakes. Now, I don't blame the older Black woman who was at that table. I blame the Secretary of State, who, as the leader of the elections, as the superintendent of elections, allowed for the system to be in such disarray that I was almost denied the right to vote. But let's think about it. He was also told when he went to vote that there was a mistake. He broke the system so much that he didn't just break it for us, he broke it for everybody. And that's the other part of this. We've got to understand that this is not just about a single election. This is about the future of our democracy. And
yes.
That seems less important, but I spend a lot of time talking in the book about how authoritarians get power, how we find ourselves in these spaces. And it happens in part because of complacency, because we get used to crazy. We get used to the things that should work being slightly broken, and then there's a little more broken, and then suddenly they don't exist, and the protections that we need are gone. And we know that in a nation like the United States, when things break, we get hurt first.
Yes.
And so our responsibility is to ensure that those in charge of maintaining these systems actually have us in mind when they do their jobs.
Listen, let me be really clear. Black lives do not matter until we vote. Okay? And we don't just vote for who's in the White House. We vote for every elected official because that vote has power. And when they know you need our vote, the way we gave back Joe Biden his political career in Carolina, it was the black vote, the only primary he won. We gave him his political career back. He now has a direct pathway to the White House. And when you have that vote, and we have it, so click your heels three times, Dorothy, you already are in Kansas and you have all the power in the world. With that vote, you have the ability to have an ask. And the first ask is get your knee off my neck. You can't stop all of these atrocities against us until each and every last one of us, and I do mean each and every last one of us, uses the most powerful, and I say powerful weapon we have, the vote. Use your most powerful weapon and make sure everybody you know uses it. And I mean even your lazy cousins, the ones who take naps for 25 hours a day, wake them up and make them vote. Find them wherever they are. I don't care what they're smoking. Get them registered. And this is part of the reason why we have mass incarceration. As they arrest us and put us in prison, they're taking away that vote. That's part of the things they want to take away from us. You have no clue like how powerful you are. Like I said, that white vote is usually split. And you are the deciding factor. Do not give up your power. Black America, you're running things. Now step up.
So you both touched on what I want to ask about, which is this discrediting, undermining, making the community feel like the vote doesn't matter. So I'm a digital generation baby, right? And I know that under this video, there's going to be 100 comments from people saying, I don't want to vote for Joe Biden, or my vote needs to come with reparations, for example. And so what is the sort of middle ground, right, where we tell people that, yes, this is the agenda, this is what you asked for, but you still have to show up? Because there are going to be people who say, I'm not showing up. Well, how do we respond to that?
Number one, we have to stop romanticizing what the vote does. A vote is not a magic pill. The world doesn't get better in a day because you voted. And we can't elect saviors. There is not one politician who is going to save us all. It doesn't happen. Politicians are human. And that means there's inherent fallibility. So we've got to tell the truth about what voting does. Voting is not a magic pill, but voting is chemotherapy for the disease of racism. It's radiation treatment for the disease of systemic inequities. And when you take those treatments, you do it time after time after time, and sometimes the treatment feels harder and worse than the symptoms of the disease, but you do it because you know if you don't, the disease will metastasize and it will take you out. And so we have to treat the act of voting as a process, as a treatment for the diseases we want to cure, and we have to know that it's going to take a minute to get to the cure. And the reason we have seen fits and starts in our progress is that we get something and we forget that we've got to keep fighting, because evil doesn't go away because you defeat it once. The Avengers movie, if it teaches us anything, the Avengers have taught us that villains will always come back. And so we've got to constantly be on our guard. We've got to constantly be out there doing, and voting is a part of it. But let's not divorce it from protesting. I was a protester before I was a voter. Before I was old enough to vote, my parents had me out protesting, but my parents also took me with them every time they went to vote, because they wanted us to understand that the twin connections, you said middle ground, Natasha, and it's actually a through line. To get from point A to point B, if we want that change, we've got to connect these dots. We've got to protest in the streets and then protest in the ballot boxes, because as Byron said, our votes carry such extraordinary weight because we are the one category of voter that has an almost 90%+ likelihood of delivering someone to success. We are the most loyal voters in America, because we have been the most oppressed voters in American history. And there, with the notable exception, potentially, I would put in sort of a parallelism, what has been done to Native Americans. But it's different evils. But we have to recognize that, one, we cannot pretend that voting solves every problem, but it is the best solution we have. And it is the only solution that we can control. Because when we have the right to vote, when we can exercise that power, then we can not only hire the people we need, we can fire the people we don't like. One of the best ways I've heard voting described, it is a peaceful overthrow of government. Every 2 years, every 4 years, at the city, the state, the county levels, and the federal level, we can throw out the folks we don't like and bring in the folks we do like, but we have to remember that while we're doing our stuff, the people who want our demise are doing theirs, and that's why we've got to keep coming back and keep coming back. But progress is made, because I'm not a sharecropper. I'm not a slave. My great-great-grandparents were. My great-great-great-great-grandparents were. I was the first Black woman to stand for governor in the history of the United States. So there is progress being made, but that progress is not finished, which is why I'm not the governor. And we have to keep doing the work. And when I am whatever I'm going to be, I will not be perfect at it. And so the last thing I'll say is, we cannot wait for the excitement of a candidate. We don't need to be excited about a candidate. We need to be excited about our power, because yes, our power is perennial. Candidates come and go.
That's
but our
right.
Power is permanent.
Yes,
so
that's
the Byron,
right.
What do you always say? That. You said politicians are temporary what?
Politicians are nothing more than temporary hired help, disposable paper cups, okay? And I'm, you know, there's a great book called Dark Money. And Dark Money is written by Jane Mayer. And she's talking about all these super wealthy white billionaires who pool their money together, about $1 billion a year, to finance policy, to hold you down, to oppress you, and to get their politicians elected who carry out their agenda. So we as Black Americans, we have the advantage because we have a lot of votes. And so when we vote, we're able to, you know, here's when you have all the power, is when every politician in DC knows, I have to be really fair with Black people because Black people vote. And if I offend Black people, I will not get elected or reelected. When they know that we vote and we take voting seriously, like our next breath of air, that's when politicians start to carry out our agenda, whether it's reparations, whatever it is. When they know we vote, they don't mess with you. And that's the reason why they work so hard, like what Stacey said earlier, like in the South, over 50% of Black people don't have access to early voting. That is by design. That is positioning Black America to fail. And they need us to fail because right now we have the power when we vote. You have to vote and you have to vote early wherever you can and know that you do have the power, and the pathway to reparations is when politicians know they cannot offend you. And the other thing is, we have to make sure that we participate in the census. Yes. You want to talk about that, Stacey?
I do. So in the wake of 2018, I started two organizations. One is called Fair Fight. If you go to fairfight.org, you can learn about the work we're doing on voter suppression. So you can learn about what's happening in your community, what you need to know, wherever your cousins live, your family lives, whatever you need to know, we can help you figure out how to make voting real. But the census is that secret weapon that is deciding the future in ways we don't understand. The Trump administration has done its level best to scare us out of participating in the census. And they've done it because the census is not just about counting. It's about allocating political power and economic power. If you want to know one of the reasons Black communities are dying at a higher rate from COVID-19, are the least likely to get PPE, it's because we were undercounted in the 2010 census. So when they allocated the resources, when they allocated the funding, it didn't come to our communities. It's why our classrooms are overcrowded, because they didn't count our children. Black people are among the most likely to be undercounted. It's also how they steal political power. When reapportionment happens, that's when every 10 years, we count up everybody in the United States, look at where they live, and we shift how many people you have in Congress who represent you. Reapportionment is how they decide who has power in which states. Well, because more than 58% of Black people live in the South, it's a good thing if we get more power because of where we live. But if they undercount us, the power that we had when we were in another state stays there. It doesn't come where we are. The other reality, it's how they draw political lines. And let's think about districts in this way. Imagine that you're told to go into a room and negotiate with everyone in the room for the things you need. Do you want to be in a room with people who share your values and share your problems and understand your concerns? Or do you want to be in a room of people who think that you are lazy, who think you don't deserve anything, and who want to do whatever they can to keep you down? That's how political lines are. They decide which room you go in. And unfortunately, in 2010, because we did not, not only did we not fully participate in the census, because of voter suppression, we also weren't able to vote at the power that we needed to. They drew political lines to steal our power. The Flint water crisis happened in part because of gerrymandering, because in Michigan, they drew lines to take power away from the people, which allowed them to steal the right to govern yourself from the Black and brown communities that elected mayors. If you don't want that to happen again, we have to complete the census. And here's the other thing. People are afraid that the census is somehow going to find you and tell them where you are, and you're going to have to pay child support, or they're going to, somebody in your family has a warrant, or if you're a Black immigrant, that they're going to use it to send ICE to raid your family. There is no citizenship question. They cannot ask, and they cannot do. Number two, if you have a cell phone or utility bill, they already know how to find you. All the census does is tells them what you need. It doesn't, can't be used to come and get you. But more than anything, it is how we get our money. Imagine your stimulus check going not to you, but going to your worst enemy every year for 10 years. And the check gets bigger and bigger every year, but every year you get nothing. And the person you despise the most gets your money and gets to go do whatever they want with it. That's what happens when we don't participate in the census. And so I created the organization Fair Count. If you go to faircount.org, we can tell you about how to help make certain your community gets counted in the census. Black and brown people, we are being undercounted. We are behind by almost 14% is the Black community. The Latino community is behind by about 12%. What that means is that when they get ready to draw those lines, instead of putting us in a district with people who share our values and share our needs, they're going to draw the line so they divide us up into these tiny slivers. And they can do it if they can't count us, because under the Constitution, we can only sue them if we can prove they knew we were there. But if we don't fill out the census, they have plausible deniability. And so we've got to do the work of making sure they see us and know we're there. We've got to shout from the rooftops, because they're going to decide the power for the next 10 years. And they are so desperate to hold that power, they're willing to burn everything down to keep us out.
And you're talking about the flow of approximately $1.5 trillion. $1.5 trillion. That's a lot of Big Macs. Okay. So that's what you're talking about here. So you have to participate. And they, and because of COVID-19, they've extended the time in which you can fill out the census until, I believe, is the end of October.
October 31st. Although the Trump administration is doing their best to sneak in an early cutoff. So we're fighting right now to stop them from cutting it off early, because if they cut it off now, they can basically erase Black communities by 15%. So we need it to fill out, and we need to get it done. Faircount.org can tell you all about it.
And you talked about something earlier where you talked about Attorney General Barr saying he feels that he's entitled to early voting, but others are not. You know, listen, that is white supremacy. What's good for me is not good for you. What I should have, you shouldn't have. That is the very definition of white supremacy. So let me be really clear. If you can vote early, we can all vote early. There are no exceptions. The fact that that's even coming out of the Attorney General's mouth is insane. Think about that. Because really what they want to do, Trump already told you, look, I don't believe in early voting. So obviously his Attorney General is carrying out his wishes. What Trump wants to do is play a pimp game on Black America and tell Black America, 45 million of you need to show up at 2 voting polls. And good luck. We don't have early voting for you. You can't do mail-in. We need 45 million Negroes to go to 2 voting polls. Good luck. That's their pimp game to shut you down. Do not let anybody shut you down.
And that is why we have this conversation. We hope that everybody who's watching is inspired to make sure that you're registered, you vote early, and once you're done, don't just think about yourself. Go out there and advocate. Go to Fair Fight Action and Fair Count as well for the census. Stacey Abrams, thank you so much for your time today. Always a pleasure.
I'm getting ready. As a matter of fact, I'm so hyped up. I'm getting ready to go vote right now. And the polls aren't even open. I'm just going to stand there and vote just to vote.
Byron, thank you so much for having me. Natasha, thank you so much.
And let me just tell you, I appreciate you so much because the Griot is officially the number one 100% Black-owned media destination site on the web. Last month, we did over 10.5 million monthly active users.
Fantastic.
And we love everybody who's a part of the Griot family. And you just spoke to our family, over 10.5 million of us. This is a powerful message. This is the number one Black-owned media platform on planet Earth. And we appreciate you coming here and talking to us and sharing with us how you can unleash our power. You're the best. We love you. And whatever you need, we're here for you.
Absolutely. Thank you, guys. Take care.
You heard it right here on Dear Culture. Two things you must do: fill out that census and register to vote. Thanks again for listening to Dear Culture. If you liked what you heard, please give us a 5-star review and subscribe to the show wherever you listen to your podcast. Share it with everyone you know. Please email all questions, suggestions, and compliments to podcasts@thegriot.com. The Dear Culture podcast is brought to you by The Griot and executive produced by Blue Talusma.